Ever wondered why some startups barely pitch and still get oversubscribed and invested? Most founders are chasing capital when they should be attracting it. Today, our guests have helped over 4,500 startups and work with more than 900 investors to decode exactly what makes a startup so investable that great capital starts to chase you. We'll unpack how to validate the right problem, master investor alignment, and build traction that speaks for itself. Let's turn your pitch fatigue into irresistible momentum.
Welcome to Provider's Edge, the podcast that helps healthcare entrepreneurs and innovators break down barriers and control their business, life, and future with valuable action steps. With me, your host, Sabrina Rombach, a recovered clinician and a business deal catalyst. Let's rewrite the rules and create a positive social impact while increasing your profitability.
Before we dive into today's expert conversation, I want to pause for a minute and talk directly to the innovators in the room, especially if you're preparing for a raise or aim to land a pivotal partnership this year. Your pitch isn't just a story, it's a strategy. And if you're still guessing what investors or decision makers want to hear, you're already behind. That's exactly why we built Pitch to Yes. We don't just critique your pitch, we co-create it with you. You will walk away with a persuasion scorecard and a rewritten pitch that turns attention into action. Apply at pitchtoyes.com. Now let's dive into today's conversation.
I think that one process that I find to be, maybe it's because I'm new, but I find the process of raising capital, both from a startup company, like a tech startup, to invest to a VC company, I find that process a bit opaque, and I find the process of raising capital from LPs a bit opaque. I think this is, if we can demystify that, and like I have some ideas in my mind that is more structured than when I got started, I think that would help startup companies immensely. Because I think, first of all, startup companies, the average founder doesn't have the skills nor the network to raise capital. And they waste a lot of time trying to find the right investors, trying to raise capital. In my humble opinion, that is not the job of a founder. The job of a founder is to build their product, get it out to the marketplace. And it's the job of investors to basically provide cover and shepherd them through that process of making introductions to the right investors, making sure that their story is good, they have a compelling story to tell investors, make sure they have a compelling pitch deck, and guide them through that process. And I just really want to hear from other people what you think about this process and how we can provide more standardization to it and how it can help founders.
I figured Kurt would have something to say about this.
I have a lot to say about this. I like it, Marie, that you feel that investors should be value add. That is how I endeavor to be as a full-time VC. And because I was so turned off by the whole experience, both from raising funds and from trying to help our founders, and I didn't know what I know today, just to say that. That's not the way we have to be practical about the way the world actually works versus where we would like it to go. And what I mean by that is most founders don't have a lead investor yet. So we need to train them to be fundraising fluent, to fish for themselves. And so that's one of the biggest things that Fusion spends time doing, is we teach our founders to be fundraising assassins. They know where the capital is. The average founder and the average fund manager does not know where the capital is. Don't know. They don't understand capital macros. They don't understand capital categories. They don't understand capital types. And if they don't understand those things and they don't know where it is, they can't go get it. We often will share case studies of some of the biggest, you know, startups and how they've gone on to raise. And normally what's happening is somebody, going back to Marie's point of how a value add investor should be involved, they're rigging the game for the founder to make sure that they're going to be successful, and they're pairing them up with different resources and relationships as time goes on. I'm sure everybody's got a lot of opinions on this. I don't want to, you know, monopolize all the time, but this is something that I spend more of my time understanding than probably most other topics. There was many in the beginning of the discovery process when I started building my first fundraising platform. I'm on my third one now. I thought I was the dumb VC that nobody told how all this worked. I was tracking all the money flowing into venture. I started seeing a very interesting phenomenon 3 years ago. How is it possible that if the reported amount of money flowing into startups, which before that was 330 something billion a year, is dropping by 100 billion, we're starting to see that raise again every year. Why is it that the total amount of liquidity moving into startups is unchanged? Where is the delta? Where's the difference coming from? And I started realizing all the alternative sources that quietly backdoor capital. So we teach founders how to raise traditionally, and we teach them how to raise, you know, alternatively as well. So there's a lot to unpack in all of those things. I don't disagree with anything that Marie said when it comes down to how things should be. And that's the reason why our entire North Star for everything I do, all the crazy stuff that we come up with, it's all about helping founders to become funders. And what does that look like? That's the reason I built a venture studios, because we can help founders get there quicker. The challenge is venture studios, if it's a pure venture studio model, can only serve, you know, a dozen startups, you know, not a lot really, unless it starts to become something that I don't really think is a venture studio. I also have an accelerator. I built an accelerator like fighting tooth and nail, guys. I didn't want to, but the reality is we're doing the work. We spend 80% of our time helping founders to get over the biggest thing that I learned from putting 900 investors together with, and these guys, we didn't have a list of investors that we called every single one of them. Can you guys imagine the time to verify and validate? Do you have money? Are you allocating right now? And then 4,500 startups. Here's what I learned, guys. Too long, didn't read. Startups don't understand what market readiness is. They're not even close to understanding what it takes to stand up a venture. I don't even want to hear about fundraising or product market fit from a founder. They don't even know what those two things mean. Right? I want to hear that you have verified and validated before you've spent $50,000 and you only have a couple of months to do it. Now, if it's not the right problem to work on, go find another one. We'll support you in the next problem, but make sure you've got problem fit figured out first.
Today's discussion is part of our Venture Vitality Roundtable, a private invite-only series hosted by Post Point Pass and York Seed, where we bring together active investors across healthcare, innovation space, biotech, digital health, life sciences. Each month, we explore real questions like, what makes a startup truly investable? Where are you investing in healthcare? And how are you making these decisions? What challenges your portfolio companies are facing? And how can we align capital with commercialization faster? If you're part of a family office, angel group, venture capital, private equity, or healthcare banking, we would love to have you in our next roundtable. Request your invitation at postpointpass.com/venture-vitality. Now, let's jump into today's discussion.
The data, we're very data-driven. My partner built a $500 million hedge fund prior to this, right? So he comes from the world of data. And so what the data shows is that product market fit is a non-starter conversation to have when you're pre-seed and seed. You usually don't get to true product market fit, which we can define as a business model that's ready to scale versus a problem that's ready to have a solution built for it and then potentially raised for is about 2 years. So you're really approaching Series A by the time you have true product market fit, if you have it at all. So there's a lot of misnomers out there, I think. And guys, what we found, sorry, I didn't quite say it, is that founders don't verify and validate. And so they go build stuff before they've even validated the problem. I'm from Utah, so maybe the culture is a little different, but Utah's a sales culture. That's the reason the founders freaking crush it. Right. They know they have to go sell something before they build it. Founders build something before they go sell it. And that's the problem. That's the big problem. So we spent all this time helping our founders do what we call the 100 challenge. If you're not willing to go talk to 100 clients, customers minimum, 500 is better, 1,000 is even better. Don't even talk to us. You're not serious. Like, you go be a small business owner, which is awesome. There's nothing wrong with that. You probably make more money. You want to be a startup founder in today's day and age. The technology is moving so fast, you won't make it if you don't de-risk it. So now, when it comes to liquidity pools, for those of you guys raising new funds, as I've raised funds before, and I talk to groups that do it constantly all day long, the good news is LPs are starting to look more directly at who they can work with, because the current places they've been investing their money hasn't been working out super great. When it comes to family offices, they're also increasingly wanting to get more into venture. There's two groups: the baby boomers, who built their company very slowly over 30, 40, 50 years and have now exited. They're a little different. They're more likely to give you guys money than to go do it on their own. The next generation, like myself, the millennials, they want to build this stuff inside their family office, because they know they've got a longer time in market, you know, to be doing this stuff. They're not as likely to hand money to a fund manager. They're more likely to say, I need it, or their partner maybe with you guys to launch a fund of some kind, right? And the family office world is all over the place. People like talk about it like it's like one monolithic thing, but it's like, okay, how many of these founders are wildcats? All of them. So why would they all be the same? They're all completely different. So yeah, a lot to say on this. We have tons of data to share with you guys on this. We're constantly harvesting data. We built our own machine for that, so that we can show the founders the capital is unlimited. It's absolutely unlimited. And great capital chases really good deals. So we try to get founders to understand they need to have something that's worthy of being chased in the first place. So we're really, really tough on the way that they learn to pitch. We don't believe in pitch decks. I think pitch decks are a joke. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't have them, because it's the currency of the majority of the world. You want to know what I want to see from a founder? A 2-minute video pitch with no decks, no slides. I know if you know what the hell you're talking about. I know if I can send you somewhere to like to buy, and that you're going to make sure you make the most of that opportunity, because you're so dangerous. You can pitch anywhere to any person, anytime, anywhere. I already said that twice. So that's just a couple of comments that I have on that. If you build it, they won't come. That's right, Mark. There's very few. And unless you've got a go-to community strategy, which is something else that we really
Yes. I've seen it again and again, you know, overworking over like several startups. I mean, that article was an MIT Sloan Review. I remember reading it, like God knows, in the early 90s when I was working for IBM, and just like again and again, people just kind of create stuff. And yeah, you're so right, Kurt, that you, this is kind of what I've done for startups is, yeah, you got to get out there and just really talk to everybody, interview, like kind of stuff we did at Gartner, go to market, interview, you know, questions, interrogate the market we would use, find out if people really care about it, that you've got something unique to bring, get them as sponsors, what would it take for a proof of concept, and and just kind of make sure you're building to real customer needs.
Exactly. And I think sometimes the founders who are not great at selling yet, I'm like, this is not selling. This is actually seeing if people actually care enough for you to build something. And sometimes it's about going back to the drawing board. I give you almost like a questionnaire script for them then to take to go, right? Because the barrier is that I don't know what to ask, right? I have this idea in my head, I just want people to hear from me, but they're not having a dialogue. And when they don't have a dialogue, then they go into this educating mode, right? Like, hey, let me just regurgitate everything that I wanted to share. Tell me feedback. That's not helpful. You should be like interviewing, right? Just like, hey, what are you been working on? What's the challenges? I see this is what you're doing. Is this 3D the gap, right? Not having those dialogue is so killer. And I think that they needed to put themselves into a different mindset. And I also love what Kurt is talking about. One of the biggest thing is, how can you build a community first? And not feeling like you're just start to sell them, right? You have some bigger mission that we're changing. Right. One of the company we're helping is about non-hormonal birth control, right? Because a lot of people just, women, right? Like they have polyps, they have all these things, and then they got put on birth control, and you actually have all these other opposite, right? Effect, obesity and all that. So then we were talking about, let's build you a community first, right? And then when your drug come out in the next few years, you have a community to sell to, and you know how to sell to them because you have all the dialogue, right?
Yeah, you involve them in the journey.
And that's where the conversation went deeper. We broke down why chasing product market fit too early is a trap and how most founders skip the one thing that matters most, validating the right problem first. This segment also challenges the myth that pitch deck raise money. What actually opens doors? A 2-minute quick pitch. If you can make that into a video where people see your personality and your passion, that's even better. 100 customer dialogue and a community that's been part of your mission from day one. Because in today's market, if you're not building with your audience, you're building in the dark. Now, I wanted to hear from you before you go to the rest of the episode. Tell us in wherever you are listening and watching this, or post on LinkedIn and tag me, Sabrina Rumbach. What is the last conversation you have with your ideal customer before building anything?
And yeah, you come at it from a kind of a mission, like we're really trying to help. This is what we see as the problem and a potential solution. Totally agree. And you get having them sort of be, as you said, you're not really trying to sell to them. You're just trying to go on and have them go on a journey with you to do something that's important. And you're smart and structured about who you're interviewing and how you're interviewing and keeping track of all of that. You're sharing back with them, so keeping them involved, just kind of. And then making them feel kind of excited about how it's emerging and getting defined. And, I think there's a lot of shared passion for doing that in this group, Kurt, and everybody. And, in terms of my ask, it would be, I would love to team up with somebody and do this kind of work. I've been working on my own quite a bit on different projects. And I want to team up with some good people, find some clients and do some great work together. So that's, if you guys have any thoughts on that, and I'll reach out. That's what I'd love to do.
Can I also add to this conversation? As I said, Scale Up Ventures was all about marketplace access and commercialization. It's exactly what we're doing. We recognize that, not just recognize, we know from experience, businesses who are looking for investment, you've got to show and demonstrate that actually you've got that market traction, right?
Right.
Now, market traction doesn't necessarily, imagine this on a pitch deck, doesn't necessarily mean that you're in healthcare. Doesn't necessarily mean that you've got paying customers. If you can get a clinical trial or a pilot going where you've already proven that gain the interest of a particular health region, because that's their priority. If they wouldn't do a pilot if there isn't a need. What we're doing on behalf of that client is we're saying, okay, we'll negotiate this on your behalf and get the hospital to pay for it. But let's also negotiate, if the pilot is successful, that there is a localized contract in place. Now imagine that on a pitch deck, right? That's a very powerful proposition. And I completely agree. But in the case of healthcare, it's a little bit, the struggle is there because you can't just break the full market, right? But if you can do little localized deals like that, that also shows and demonstrates market traction. And of course, they'll want their pilot to work, but that customer feedback as a result of the pilot or the clinical trial will also help them, if there's agility there, to adapt the product or service in order to actually meet the localized need and therefore give them the opportunity to then expand and grow their business in other regions. So that's part of the modeling that we have within Scale Up Ventures, where the marketplace access is not just saying, here's a big market. It's about the going drilling down to the specifics around that particular product and service, the founder innovation, and the product market fit in terms of finding those customers and actually running those trials based on commercial opportunities. We are now seeing that it's a win-win for both, actually. It's not a one-tracked approach. It's a win-win for both because we know that the sector is looking for solutions. They just don't know where these innovations are. They don't have the time. It's not what they do. No. It's not their day job, right? And then in terms of the conversation here today, it does help in terms of that pitch deck and that proposition to the potential investor community. So just wanted to add that.
Appreciate it. Marie, what do you think from all the little chime-ins?
I really like what Kurt was saying about educating and upskilling founders and arming them with the intelligence of what venture firms have capital and are ready to deploy, and matching them up with what the founder is, you know, you need to have the right investor for the right founder, right? Founder needs that, that match is so important, because a lot of times you find yourself pitching to the wrong investor and you're just wasting your time, and time is money. So I think the way Kurt is going about it is invaluable to founders.
Yeah, for sure, right? And I think that's because they need to take time to actually review and talk to people, look at what they have done, what they care about, right? All this investor profile, instead of playing the numbers game of, hey, I'm attending this large summit, let me just contact every single investor who's going just to get a meeting, right? So I think that's where the alignment is now there. And then some of them will come back. It's like, oh, well, the deal fall through because they want to take over too much. They are like, then the founder feel like losing identity. Then we always ask, like, why was those conversation not discussed earlier? Right? Why are you too like money hungry that you didn't thought about these type of questions about alignment, about how this partnership going to work? Yeah. Awesome.
Today, I have some amazing investors in the room with me doing Venture Vitality. This panel has demystified what makes a startup truly investable. Therefore, we're giving you 5 core learning points for all the innovators, founders out there. Number one, founders must be fluent in fundraising macros. You cannot raise from a landscape you don't understand. Knowing the types of capital, macro trends, and investor behavior isn't optional, it's survival. Number two, market readiness beats product market fit. Stop chasing your PMF before you're verifying the problem. Founders must de-risk by validating the problem first, not just building the solution. Number three, community is a pre-sale strategy. If you build a mission-first community before launching your product, you're not just warming up leads, you're creating your future evangelists. Number four, pitch deck are dead weight without story. A polished pitch deck doesn't raise capital. A powerful 2-minute video does. Clarity, conviction, and proof of problem validation win the room. Number five, local pilots equal scalable traction. In healthcare innovation, traction doesn't always mean revenue, especially you are pre-seed. What people are looking for is that you have a clear plan and then you are able to meet your milestones. Strategic pilots with hospitals or trials that show interest and commitment, that's your way in. So my question for you today is, if you had to explain your mission in 2 minutes with no slide, could you be able to say it right now? If not, perhaps write them down and share with us. We'd love to hear you at our Pitch to Yes workshop.
Thank you for tuning in to Provider's Edge podcast. We hope you enjoy our latest episode and found the insights and tips helpful. We'd love to hear your feedback on the show and learn what topics you'd like us to cover in the future. So please take a moment to leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform and let us know what you think. Your feedback is essential to help us improve the show and provide you with the content you need to take your healthcare business to the next level. Thank you for your support, and we look forward to hearing from you soon.